The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition, where timely topic today, we're going to discuss the new SECURE Act, SECURE being an acronym. Stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement. So the Department of Acronyms back in Washington, D.C. has been hard at work on that one. The SECURE Act just got added to a bill that passed the House the last couple days. Senate has yet to pass it, but it's expected for that to happen, as well as a presidential signature prior to the end of 2019. So it looks like we are finally going to get some modifications to retirement accounts and rules in the retirement world here before 2019 ends. It's going to be in effect mostly starting in 2020, but there's a number of changes we're going to talk about today. So, hi, Jim.
Hello there.
You have our summary list over there,
the
hopefully.
Typical government jamming everything down our throats right at the last minute of the year. Attaching it, as is always the case, to an omnibus spending bill that takes pork spending to new stratospheres. $310 billion of additional spending in one short year over the previous year. You know, we're going to be running over $1 trillion deficit. It's nuts. And we're in a...
Oh, a trillion here, a trillion there.
Before you know it, it's real money. But anyways, irrespective of how this passed and all the extra spending that the government is going to be doing, which is going to screw us all in about another 15, 20 years or less. We'll put all that aside and we'll simply say they've made some pretty significant changes, the biggest of which, and we're going to do a dedicated EDU show on this, but the biggest change is what Chris and I have been preaching, I think ad nauseum, ever since it passed in 2002, but definitely ad nauseum over the last 3 or 4 years, we have been saying consistently, the stretch IRA is going to go the way of the dodo bird. Mm-hmm. It never was the rule, and we're going to go back to the old rule.
Almost.
Eventually, we probably will. I will start saying it now. Yeah. We will eventually truly go back to the way it once was. This is just the opening salvo. But the stretch IRA, most of you people listening to this show today are going to be do-it-yourselfers. Again, we often say, why the hell else are you listening to this? And you're probably very successful in your careers. You saved diligently. Unfortunately, the majority of you, from what we can see from the people we chat with, save it all in retirement accounts. But you've amassed millions, and unfortunately, 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, sometimes 95 or more percent of your money is in what the industry calls qualified retirement accounts, but we affectionately here call always taxable accounts, because distributions, for the most part, are always taxable. Anyways, those accounts are the ones that are going to be decimated with taxes because of the death of the stretch. And that's what we want to talk about. In case if you don't know what we mean,
well,
death
the little
of stretch,
bit of the little bit of good news is the abundance of tax implications are going to be after you've passed away.
Yeah, you don't
so
have
it's not
to worry
affect
about it.
You so much.
Yeah, it's not going to affect you at all.
But maybe others in your family or people that you wanted to be beneficiaries of those accounts now have very, very different rules they're going to have to play by.
Right, because it's not all theirs, and it's not all yours. And you should always look at your accounts to begin with like that. We have said on this podcast in the past that there is no such thing as a joint IRA. The I in IRA stands for?
Individual.
Individual. Mm-hmm. But we always say on this podcast as well, if you're a long-time listener, you've heard it, because I don't think we've said this in a while, Chris. We tell everyone you have a joint IRA. Everybody has a joint IRA. Even though jointly owned IRAs are not allowed, everybody has a joint IRA. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, why don't you explain to everyone what this little riddle is?
Well, maybe you didn't realize it, but you all have Uncle Sam as a joint claimant, we might call him, on your IRA account.
I'd say beneficiary.
And that's
he's the unnamed
true.
Silent beneficiary
true.
Who
true.
Takes a hell yeah. of a lot of your IRA.
So if you're just on average, if your potential tax burden of your IRA is 25%. If typically you, and I'm simplifying this, of course, but if you typically, when you take money out of your IRA, recognize income, and just for sake of argument, you pay about 25% in taxes, that means on a $100,000 IRA, $75,000 of it is yours, and the other $25,000 belongs to Uncle Sam. And as your side grows, so does his, so does Uncle Sam's. And they're fine with that, but eventually they're going to want theirs. Uncle Sam is going to want theirs. And that's where the rules for distribution, particularly forced distributions, that's Uncle Sam saying, it's time now. I've waited long enough. You need to start taking my part out of this, which comes out with your part. So I only get my piece when you take out your piece, so you need to start doing it now. Used to be 70 and a half is the trigger year. Do we want to talk about that
as the
first thing?
No, we'll get into that, but the death of the stretch was the big one. Okay, we don't want to go too deep into that because I got a lot I want to go over today. Let me cover. We're going to name them, and then I'm going to start delving into them. I will say we are going to do a dedicated EDU show as well on the death of the stretch. We're not going to do it today because I insist on having that very melancholy music playing. So we can get that. I don't know how that became the song of death. Do you have any idea? The history behind it? I don't even know what that song that is. But it is definitely the song of death.
You know, at one time I knew where that came from, and I don't recall now.
Apparently,
it'll come to me. We'll figure it out when we play it.
Okay. But anyways, we need that sound effect. And then we are going to do a dedicated EDU to the death of the stretch, because I'm going to talk about it today, but I want to really get into it in another show. Okay. There were six big, I say big, some are bigger than others, but six key changes or impacts that the Secure Act has to retirement planning. Now, there's others in it. This bill is over 500 or 1,000 pages. I mean, we're not talking a small little bill here. There's a lot of pages in that damn thing. But there's six that are really going to impact us as the retirement and IRA show, because a lot of these provisions affect retirement and IRAs. So it fits perfect. Okay, first, they are going to eliminate the age for making IRA contributions. We're going to get into that in a second, but that's one of the things they do. Second thing, they're going to increase the age for required minimum distributions. Before you get wicked excited over that and start popping the champagne corks, it's a year and a half more, so it's not nearly as much as what you think, but they are going to change the age for RMDs. Third thing they are going to do is allow penalty-free withdrawals for adoption and birth of a child. I must say, I'm not a fan of this provision at all. A retirement account should be for retirement, but that's my own personal belief. We'll get into that also today. Fourth, they are going to allow and this really is going to apply to a very narrow focused group of people, but if you are receiving a fellowship or a stipend, you can now treat that as compensation for IRA contribution purposes. Mm. That doesn't really affect a lot of people.
No, but there were people in that position that were barred from making contributions.
Exactly.
And their stipend was just a technical term for the equivalent of salary. So got it.
So they're happy. Here's one that's causing a lot of consternation. Next to the death of the stretch, everyone is acting surprised that the stretch IRA is going away.
What?
That's the that's what I mean. I mean, you and I have been saying this for a while. Not just us. Yeah. A lot of people, I guess, who are knowledgeable are saying this. But especially in the estate planning realm, because Pete keeps me posted on a lot of this. And I follow a couple of websites that estate planners frequent. And they're acting shocked and appalled and surprised. Mostly because of the detrimental effects this is going to have on a trust. Yeah. But we've always said one of the worst beneficiaries is a trust. Now, the attorneys loved trust because they're complicated and expensive and wanted everyone with an IRA to have a trust. And now they're in a tizzy fit because the death of the stretch is ruining
how those trusts are planned to work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't know why they're having a tizzy fit. They've got, at least for the next few years, a hell of a lot of income coming in because all those trusts they created, they've got to redo them. Yeah. So they should be happy about that. But anyways, here's another one that is getting a lot of tizzy fits in our industry. And it seems so benign, but it's pulling out the anti-annuity people left and right.
Yeah.
Allowing annuities. Well, annuities are allowed in 401ks, but you'll never find one in a 401k because no employer ever wanted to allow them because there was no safe harbor provision for the employer. In other words, if the employer wanted to offer an annuity choice, and we're talking a deferred income annuity, but if you wanted to be able to buy an annuity while you're working to help guarantee income, so in other words, create your own kind of pension, it wasn't being forced down your throat. It was just an option if you wanted to do it. Employers never offered that because there was no protection if anything ever happened to the insurance company. Right. And employers didn't want to be held liable. Hey, you offered us this annuity with this insurance company. The insurance company went out of business. We're going to go sue you. So the government has now given the employers immunity. Now, they don't have immunity to go out and pick Joe's used insurance. They do have to do some due diligence, right, fiduciary duty to make sure the insurance company is highly rated and meets fiduciary standards. But if they can prove that they did all that and the insurance company goes out of business, then there will be some protections. Well, this is going to open up the door, not tomorrow. Well, first of all, not tomorrow, because tomorrow still has to be a new year, but not the first day of 2020. But I think within the next 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to start seeing a lot of 401ks offering an annuity option now to allow people to choose if they want some of their contributions to be promised back to them as guaranteed income. And allegedly, I haven't read the act yet, it's supposed to be portable, so you can move the annuity to another place and not be forced to sell it. So I think that is also in there. And then the final thing, the big one, is the death of the stretch. So those are the six main elements: eliminating the age for contributions, increasing RMDs to 72, penalty-free withdrawals for birth and adoption, fellowship and stipend payments can now be used for IRA contributions, protections for annuities inside 401ks, and death of the stretch.
There's another one. We're not going to talk about it, but I think I know why you didn't list it, because it's not really retirement planning, because we're dealing mostly with people who have already amassed assets in their retirement accounts and others, and now they're trying to figure out how to retire. But for people in that accumulation phase, these multi-employer plans, I think, are going to become a big deal. So a lot of people that have small employers don't have very good or maybe not even access at all to a 401k, where they're going to let small employers gather together in groups to form bigger plans. So you'll see these small employers be able to offer plans that behave a lot more like big plans at big employers. I think that's going to be a fairly big deal, but it's not part of your six, which I understand why.
Right. But so multiple employer plan, or MEP for short, not to be confused with a MEP, which is a multi-employer plan. I have to keep throwing that in there.
Don't go down that road.
Because it's just so stupid. Yeah. It's the same thing with the AICPA. Don't even I think the AICPA beats MEP.
Probably.
MEP and MEP.
Yeah.
There's a multi-employer plan and a multiple employer plan, all sanctioned by the government. But the AICPA has a division called the AICPA. Yeah. And I can't even remember what AICPA even means. It was Association of Independent Certified Public Accountants, AICPA.
That's the old one people think about. The offshoot is Association of International Certified
Professional Accountants.
Something like that.
CPA, yeah. Certified Professional Accountants. And I got chastised by a CPA because when I went to the AICPA meeting, I thought it was the latter, not the former. And apparently on the podcast, right. I mentioned a few times until I was corrected that you don't belong to the AICPA. You are at the AICPA. I'm like, what?
I know.
Well, you keep talking about the AICPA, but it's the AICPA that sponsors this. So,
anyway,
only a group of accountants could think it's wise to call themselves the AICPA and then try to differentiate for their international members by creating the AICPA.
It's the same acronym, right? I get it.
All right, anyways. So let's start looking at these different provisions. We're going to begin with eliminating the age for making IRA contributions. This is a pretty easy and straightforward one. Under the old law, once you reached 70 and a half, and actually it was the year you turned 70 and a half, so not the actual age.
So the same triggering event as RMDs being required. Think of it that way. They coincided. Mm-hmm.
Once you reached the age you turned 70 and a half, you could not put money into an IRA anymore.
Right.
And it was weird because you could put money into a 401k or a 403b or a Roth IRA, even a simple or a SEP IRA, but not a traditional IRA for some odd, bizarre reason. Well, they got rid of that odd, bizarre thing. And now you can put money in to a IRA, traditional IRA. Doesn't mean you'll be able to deduct it, but you'll be able to get the money in. But you'll be able to do that up to any age as long as you have
earned income.
Earned income.
So the same rule always applies to getting it in there.
Right. Yeah. So that hasn't gone away. Where this is really going to shine are you backdoor people. Those of you who are putting money in a backdoor Roth, you're going to continue to be able to do this, even under a spousal account. Because if you were a spouse, even if you weren't working, you were just married to someone who was working. If you were 70 and a half, you couldn't put money into a spousal IRA. You couldn't put money into a backdoor spousal IRA and convert it to a Roth. Now you will be able to. So I think the opportunity expansion for backdoor Roths is what's really good.
I don't think there's a ton of people that were trying to put money in a traditional IRA after 70 and a half, but...
No, but there are some
people.
There's
a handful.
There are a
absolutely.
Handful. It's not common, but it's there. Well, how many people are receiving stipends?
No, I get it. Absolutely. Some of these affect a few people. A few of these affect a lot of people.
Well, the death of the stretch.
Yeah, that's a big
everyone.
One. Yeah.
But anyways, I just wanted to point out for people in the backdoor situation, you're going to be able to continue to do that a little longer. A little bit longer if age was getting in the way. Here's one little thing, though, that they threw in there. If you are over the age of 70 and a half and you put money into a traditional IRA and deduct it, then you have to reduce your QCD by the amount of deduction. Congress was afraid of giving tax benefits. And what am I getting at there? QCD stands for Qualified Charitable Distribution. It allows you to take money out of your IRA and donate it directly to a charity without having to declare that money as income. You have to be over the age of 70 and a half. You have to be at required minimum, no longer required minimum distribution age, but you have to be over the age of 70 and a half to do a QCD. But if you are also over the age of 70 and a half and qualify to put money into an IRA, and let's say you put $7,000 in, and you qualify to deduct it, and that's the key there. I think very few people are actually going to qualify to deduct their IRA contributions. It's not as easy for everyone to deduct an IRA contribution. But if you are qualified to be able to deduct the contribution, you have to reduce your QCD by the amount of deduction. And Ed Slott, who informed us of this a couple of days ago, just pointed out that in his opinion, he said this adds unnecessary complexity, but Congress was worried about double tax benefits here.
Well, what they're doing is preventing a backdoor charitable deduction, because with the new law, of course, unless you itemize, you don't get it, but you could shuffle it through the IRA.
Correct. And deduct the IRA and then donate it to charity.
Right. You're not,
you get both,
but you always did. What do you mean you get both? You never get both. When the QCD comes out, you don't get to deduct that the year.
No,
you send
but you
it
get
to
take it out tax-free. No, that's even better, because it doesn't go onto your income.
I understand. They're just making sure you can't do it in the same year, but it's no better or worse than doing it in split years. If you put it in earlier and then later on you donate it to charity, it still comes out tax-free. Mm.
See, my take on it was a little different than yours. Let me say my take.
Go ahead.
My take is they didn't want you to be able, let's just stick to $7,000, the contribution limit.
Yep.
They didn't want you to take $7,000 out of an IRA as a QCD and pay no taxes on it and not have to declare it as income, and then take $7,000 of your income, put it in an IRA, and get to deduct that as well. I don't think they wanted you to be able to do that.
You don't get to use the QCD that came out, though. It's not yours. So you're talking about it like you get to take it out and have it.
Sure you do. If you normally give money to charity, that's the way to do it. It's through a QCD. If you normally are going to give money, you normally would have to declare that money as income and then give it to a charity.
Right. But under current law, when you do that now, if you're taking the standard deduction, you cannot deduct it.
Correct.
So this is a backdoor way of deducting the charitable contribution.
Oh, I see what you're saying, but you're missing what I'm saying. Marry this to what I'm talking about. People over 70 and a half can now make IRA contributions. You couldn't in the past.
Right.
So they didn't want you out working and taking $7,000, putting it in an IRA and deducting that, which you never could do before. And on top of that, if you were charitably inclined, you didn't have to take money, declare it as income, which puts your AGI higher and might subject more of your Social Security to taxes and more of your capital gains to taxes. Well, as a QCD, none of that happens. They didn't want you also to be able to marry the ability to lower your income by $7,000 to also say, hey, all that money that I'm giving to charities every year that normally I would have to first declare as income, push me into higher ones, and get another benefit on top of
it. You're looking at it from the reduction of your RMD effect, the RMD coming out, which you would normally have to pay taxes on. If you treat it as a QCD, then you don't.
Correct.
Yes. But there's not a double tax benefit. It's not like you're double dipping on the tax deduction.
Well, I'll let you argue with Ed, who wrote, Congress was worried about a double tax benefit here.
Just bundling them up in the same year. The real benefit is you could get a charitable deduction when you otherwise couldn't by shuffling it through the IRA.
Anyways, this is going to surprise a lot of people when they see their QCDs actually be reduced on their tax return.
Right. So this is a way. Normally, QCDs are a way to, one of the few ways you can reduce your RMD burden. If you're going to be charitably inclined anyway, you send it off to them. It satisfies part of your RMD, which you don't have to then recognize that year. Absolutely. That part that you're focusing on there is absolutely true.
Okay. Well, now that we beat that horse to death, let's go on to number two. Increase in the retirement age to 72. Under the old law, RMD age to 72. Under the old law, everybody knew You had to begin taking required minimum distributions in the year you turned 70 and a half. And they threw that half in there. Nobody knows why. Just to screw with everyone's head. So at least they simplified it and they said instead of 70 and a half, it's 72. And really where this is going to help is the sweet spot of tax planning, what Chris and I call your tax planning window, the period of time between retirement and when RMDs begin, which under the old rule was 70 and a half, under the new rule is 72. Essentially bought you two more years. Technically a year and a half, but it's like two
Well,
taxes.
No. For some people, it buys them a year. For other people, it buys them 2 years. It depends on if you were born in the first half of the year or the second half of the year. So for half of the population, you get to delay your RMDs an extra year compared to before, and the other you get two. Now back in the day, they're kind of offsetting or undoing the injustice of half of the population reaching it a year earlier than the other one, depending on when. So now everybody's simultaneous. No matter when during the year, that year you have RMDs.
What Chris is getting at is under the old rules, which is still the current rules, if you were born before July 1st, so up to June 30th, you turned 70 and a half in the same year you turned 70.
Right.
So your RMDs essentially began at 70.
Right.
For all intent and purposes.
Yep.
But if you were born July 1st to December 31st, you didn't turn 70 and a half until the following year, the year you turned 71.
Right.
So, which could be delayed until April 1st of the year you turned 72, as long as you took two RMDs out. So what Chris is saying is anyone born before June 30th, they're getting two more years,
right.
70 and 71, and having to take it out at 72. But anyone who was born like I am, like I'm being screwed in this case, anyone born in July, I'm only getting 1 year. They're not giving me two.
But you got an extra year before.
It doesn't matter. I didn't complain about that one.
Exactly.
I'm complaining about this one.
Now we're all perfectly aligned.
I don't like
this
fairness.
Now if they could just get rid of this half thing, if they could get rid of the 59 and a half thing, we're done with half years, right? they've only taken care of half of the half problem.
Yes. So... Yeah. Now, because it's 72, it only buys me one more year because I didn't have to begin RMDs until I was 71. So technically, I should be allowed to wait to 73, but I'm not sure they're going to change the Secure Gym Act and get that through Congress.
Yeah, and just to clarify, there's people out there thinking, oh my gosh, I turn 70 and a half. I turned 70 and a half this year. Do I have to make it?
I already got a call on that this morning.
You have to. The whole thing is, what if by December 31st you've turned 70 and a half, you need to take an RMD for this year, and you have to take one next year as well. You don't get to skip a year and then pick it back up at 72. If you fall under the old rule, which is you turn 70 and a half before the end of 2019, you're under the old rules. If you turn 70 and a half after that, you get to use 72.
See, now, I didn't know that one. And you're certain on that one?
Yeah. The CPA guy at Ed Slott's program clarified this for everybody.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So,
because we got a call this morning from a client who is turning 70 and a half this year. It's their first RMD, so they're allowed to delay until April 1st of next year.
Yeah.
And she was wondering, if I delay it and next year the law's in effect, can I not avoid it?
Unfortunately, no. It's based on your age, not when you trigger it or when you take it out. And so they've cut the line there. Everybody's December 31st age is going to determine what path you take, the old one or the new one.
Perfect. QCDs, back to them. Not affected. QCDs are still at age 70 and a half. So that'll add a little bit of twist. So at 70 and a half, or the year you turn 70 and a half, you can start QCDs, but you don't have to start RMDs until 72.
Oh, that's a bummer that they didn't align them.
It's actually good. No, it's not good. A bummer.
Well, it's a bummer for those of us who have to remember all the rules.
Oh.
But yes, for people who wants to make a contribution or a charitable contribution, it's a great news.
Well, with this delay to 72, it is going to make your tax planning windows bigger, people. And if you combine this with the fact that they're going to update their life expectancy tables for RMDs beginning in 2021, they're going to submit the tables later this year, and they take effect in 2021, which will lower the dollar amount that needs to come out. And before you get overly excited, that's going to be a massive reduction in how much you have to take. It's going to be it's going to be minimal. You're hardly going to see it. And that affects the lifetime tables. They haven't updated those tables for 19 years now. So they're just updating them. It's all they're doing. The insurance companies updated their tables a long time ago. Now the government's catching up to it. But that takes effect, Chris, in 2021. Yep. So between both of those, your RMDs are going to be a little bit different. But what I'm excited about is another 2 years, essentially, or 1 year if you were born after July, of tax planning opportunity. That's the good thing.
Yep.
Okay, penalty-free withdrawals for birth or adoption. I'm not overly excited about this. To me, you give people reasons to take money out of their retirement accounts, they're going to take money out of their retirement accounts. But they're going to, and it's only penalty-free, it's not tax-free, which is probably going to confuse some people. But if you have a kid or adopt a kid, they're going to allow you to take $5,000 out of your IRA to spend on the kid, I guess, or do something, penalty-free, not tax-free. This is not a per-year offer. It's a lifetime offer. So what I don't know, is it lifetime per kid or lifetime per IRA owner? In other words, if you have five kids, you know, space them out a couple of years apart, can you take $5,000 out every time you have a new kid? Or is it $5,000 lifetime no matter how many kids you have? Do you know the answer to that?
That I don't know.
Okay. I don't know that answer either. I'm sure we will end up getting that answer. Again, I think it's a good touchy-feely idea to help parents, new parents. But I think parents who tend to be young, who are in their 20s and 30s.
That's the worst possible time to take money out of
exactly.
your retirement account.
They're not really looking at what they're going to be in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. They're still at the age where they think, I'm never going to be old. Old people are old. I'm never going
to
be old.
Oh, I got plenty of time to save.
Or I'll make it up. I'll save it. You compound what that $5,000 is going to cost long term, it's probably an awful lot. And I think it's just being narrow focused. And there's no rule, Chris, that this money provingly be spent on the kid. I can see people saying, wow, I just labor was a you know what. I'm going on vacation. And I'm taking $5,000 out of my IRA. My parents are going to take care of the grandkid now. I'm hightailing it out of here. And they're going to go on a vacation somewhere. Or they're going to buy a new car with it or a couch or something. There's no rule that says the money must be spent on the child. So I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it is what it is. It feels good. It's touchy-feely. And a lot of times to politicians, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter the actual outcome of the results. It just matters how do you feel. And I think this is more of a touchy-feely one. Okay, the ability to use stipend payments and fellowship as compensation for IRA contributions. I think Chris kind of nailed that one on the head. It is like a salary. It feels like a salary, looks like a salary, taxed like a salary, but you're not allowed to use it as salary for making contributions. So I've got no problem with that one. Do you have any
no.
thing to say about either of the two that I opined on?
No.
You, with someone with six kids, may want to argue with the taking it out penalty-free, but no?
No, I don't think that's a good idea, and I think, I don't think that's a good idea, just in general. Not judging people but one would hope you'd make other plans to fund your child. Now, emergency, unforeseen expenses, and the only place you have to tap is your retirement account. I could see times when that'd be nice, but I think people in that desperate a situation would have taken it out anyway, even with the penalty, because they had no choice. But at least this removes the burden on people that absolutely have to in an emergency. I think, it entices people. It says, oh, look, ding, 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 ring the bell. Here's another way. It's almost like encouragement for taking it out, which is, I think, what you're saying. We don't want to encourage people to do it. We want there to be a discouragement from taking it out, which exactly. is the whole point of the penalty in
penalty
the first place.
Was to discourage.
That's the reason why it's there. So,
okay. Employer liability protection for annuities. We kind of already talked about this one. I actually like this one, mostly because I have no problem with annuities, income annuities. And this is, for the most part, the type of annuities they're talking about. Now, I'm going to be dead against it if an employer puts inside their 401k some godforsaken variable annuity with a income rider on it with high fees and penalties and all this other crap you see in the broker sold world. I'm hoping they are very low fee, income centric types of annuities.
Efficient, kind of institutional.
Exactly, right.
Annuities.
Institutional pricing, very low fee, income centric. Not the Q&A we did this week with the question on the person who thought they were only paying $6,000 in fees. And I went through that whole tirade. And because you never shut up, it went really long. And I hope it's not annuities like that that get put in the 401k. And I don't think it will be, because employers are still going to be required to do their due diligence as a fiduciary. And this is why they never wanted to put them in there to begin with, because they are a fiduciary. And they were worried that if the annuity they chose turned out to not be good or the company went under, they would be held liable. Now, they're not being exempt from, they are being exempt if the insurance company goes under. But I don't feel they're going to receive any protections from ERISA or from this law, rather, from the provisions of ERISA that mandate they act as a fiduciary. If they do put an annuity in the plan, Chris, like the one we talked about to that listener, that has outrageously high fees and all that other stuff in it. Mm-hmm. So employers still are going to have to do their due diligence and act as a fiduciary, but hopefully, as Chris said, we're going to get institutional pricing, very low fees, with a lot of income-centric approach to the annuity. That's what I'm hoping evolves. We will see, because I am certain the insurance companies are going to be coming into the 401k market now strongly with their sales forces, and I'm hoping the insurance companies create very meaningful and income-centric annuities to allow people to create, even on a small scale, a little bit of a pension. It's going to be nowhere as good as a nice government FERS pension or something like that, but at least create some pension, especially for the uber conservative people who are probably sitting in the stable value or money market option anyways. That might be a good thing for them.
Right.
Now, a lot of investment advisors are up in arms over this because they see money coming out of their pocket that they won't be able to manage now for an AUM fee if a rollover happens. But, God, that's so far into the future. I don't know why people are getting in a tizzy over this. Plus, there's just some advisors out there, you say the word annuity to them, it just sets them off. Mm-hmm. They don't understand it. And their own ignorance, I think, gets in their way of understanding how an income annuity works. Okay. Now we get to the granddaddy of them all that we were working on. Death of the stretch. And do we have our death music? And don't play the beep if you don't have death music.
No.
And I don't want death jam. I want death music. I don't want some heavy metal.
No, I don't have. I don't have it.
Well, we got to get that.
I thought you were going to sing it again like you did at the beginning of the show.
I didn't sing it. I hummed it.
Dun, well, dun, I don't think there's words to it.
I don't think you can. I was going to say, what are the words to da, 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 da? Except, duh.
Yeah.
But anyways, death of the stretch. And it really is no surprise to me that this is happening. Under the old law, which at the time we're recording this is still the law of the land, December 19th, when does this play? Is it already 2020?
Probably. It's probably the first show that people get to hear
In 2020?
In 2020.
Cool.
So it's by the very last show of 2019 or the very first show of 2020.
Then it's either 2020 or almost 2020.
Yeah.
I don't know when this show comes out. But anyways, under the previous rule, or the soon-to-be previous rule, if a non-spouse beneficiary inherited an IRA, they were allowed to, quote-unquote, stretch the payments over their remaining life expectancy. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into all the rules because they don't apply anymore.
Right. It's dead.
Now, if you're in the rule, you already know, and I'm not going to teach you if you're already subject to it. There is no grandfather. Well, there is technically grandfathering. If you're in the old rules, you're stuck.
Yeah, unfortunately,
in the
you're
old
grandfathered
rules.
In mandatorily.
Right. So if you're in the old rules, you've got the stretch. You were grandfathered. They're not going to drag you into
the trigger new here rules. Is the date you become the beneficiary, which is the date of death of the account holder. That has to happen by December 31st of 2019 for you to play under the old rules. If the person passes after that, your new rules.
Exactly. So under the new rules, everyone except five eligible classes of beneficiaries that we'll get into, everyone has to close an inherited IRA within 10 years of inheriting it. RMDs on inherited IRAs go the way of the dodo bird almost.
They don't exist unless you're one of the five.
Unless you're one of the five.
Right.
And the any payment, well, I don't... Technically, the last payment, if you waited 10 years, is the RMD.
Is an RMD. I guess you could call it that. But
okay.
Yeah.
So what are we getting at? If a non-spouse beneficiary inherits an IRA... Well, wait a minute. No, I'll explain the rules.
Yeah.
What you're going to have to do is nothing when you inherit a retirement account.
Well, you're not forced to do anything. You should start thinking about what you're going to do
gonna
immediately.
Get into that. Absolutely.
Immediately, yeah.
You just have to make sure by the 10th year, the end of the 10th year, following the year of death. So if someone died in 2020, by December 31st, 2030, there is no money in that account. You can take nothing out, and in the last year, take it all out, which would technically be the RMD. The RMD is essentially the entire account. And you have to satisfy that RMD over the next 10 years.
Right.
They don't care if you take a dollar out or if you take $200,000 out or $1 million out in year one. They don't care. They don't care if you let it sit for 9 years and 364 days. They don't care. What they are going to care about is on that last day of the year, December 31st of 10 years following, everything comes out.
Right.
Miss that RMD, listeners, there is a 50% penalty tax on the entire account balance.
That's left in there, yeah.
Good luck trying to dispute ignorance on that one.
Right, you're going to have a decade of reminders.
Exactly, you got a decade to figure this out. And you're going to tell the IRS, I totally forgot I was supposed to take this money out. I didn't know I had to take this money out. No one told me in 10 years that I had to take this money out. I don't see it happening. So you're going to have to be very careful, albeit you got a hell of a lot of time to figure it out. And we're going to get into that now. We're going to get into it a lot deeper on the Death of the Stretch dedicated podcast I want to do. But let's talk about, I said, everybody except five classes of beneficiaries. These five classes, you figure they're making this easier. They're not. Five classes of beneficiaries are going to have their own set of rules. Mm-hmm. The first class, as always was the case, surviving spouses.
Yeah. They still get to roll it into their own. Or can they keep it open? Remember how there was that option? We'll have to look into this. We'll make sure we look into that for the extensive show.
Yeah.
They could leave it open and use the spouse who's gone to determine the RMDs. We'll have to see if that's still allowed. I don't know if that's allowed anymore.
Right. There's a lot of things we're still trying to iron out. The bill is very long. I'm giving you guys a summary. I have yet to read any of the bill, let alone attend any of the plethora of seminars that are being peppered to me, as well as my Ed Slott meeting, which he's already told us is going to concentrate on the Secure Act. Yeah. We'll be in Dallas, Texas. Is it Dallas? No, I'm going to be in that place in Maryland. What is it?
Baltimore.
Thank you. Oh, damn it. The Ravens are going to eliminate my Pats this year. I just know it. And I have to go to Baltimore this year.
Just don't wear any Pats gear.
Well, I'm not.
Okay.
But I don't want to give Baltimoreans my hard-earned New England money.
Oh, it's Colorado money.
But anyways, I will be in Baltimore, Maryland this year. So if anyone listening is from that area and would like to meet with me, I can always fly out there a couple of days earlier and we can cry together about the demise of my New England Patriots. But I will be in Baltimore. But anyways, I'll have a lot more information on all the nuances. But just remember, for now, surviving spouses have their own special rules. So a surviving spouse has more time to figure out everything because they can move the money, as they always had the ability to their own IRA. We will get into other planning options for surviving spouses when the dust settles. The second group of classes of beneficiaries that get special options, minor children up to their age of majority. If they stay in school, it's up to age 26. Unless they are a disabled child, then they can do the stretch out for the rest of their life the way the stretch used to work. Clear as mud.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about confusing this. Minor children except grandchildren.
Oh, so it has to be your child. Yeah, you can't throw in.
Not grandchildren.
Grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all
you
those.
Can't you name can't, a one-year-old.
No, can't do that.
It's got to be your minor children. You can't use some neighbor's kid, some newborn, some random kid walking down the street.
Right.
And as, think about this, folks, you're not ensuring the stretch out for this class of beneficiary, except for the disabled beneficiary. For this class of beneficiary, it only buys time. When they reach the age of majority, which is around 18 to 21 for most states, then they have 10 years from that date to close the IRA.
Right.
But prior to that, the kid is okay. There's no RMDs. To the best of my knowledge, they don't have to take anything out between death and age of majority. And then when they reach the age of majority, let's say it's 18, they don't have to close the account until 28.
Yeah, so maybe they got full flexibility for 28 years, possibly, or 36 if they stay in school till 26.
Exactly. If they stay in school, counting grad school and beyond, mm-hmm. if they're in school, they get to age 26.
Yeah. And they'll come out with the rules as to what classifies how much they have to be
and
going
how much, right,
and all that
exactly.
kind of stuff.
Now, that said, there's huge planning opportunities here. And we're going to get into these over the coming years, I'm sure. But you're not going to let your kid sit on his little hiney and do nothing and leave that money in there and be hit with a massive tax bill just as the kid's coming out of college, perhaps, ready to get a $100,000 a year job programming some godforsaken computer for Google. So you're going to want to do some tax planning with that child when they're in very low tax rates and start getting money out of that IRA. Don't waste the time. Certainly don't waste the time thinking, oh, I'm going to grow this really big. I know how all you do it yourself is you really get off on growing your portfolios. Don't sit there thinking, I'm going to help my child or my grandchild or my nephew grow this IRA that he's been left. I'm doing wonderful. No, you're not. You're creating a tax nightmare for the poor kid. You're going to use this time period to start getting money out of that account and get it into an account that is going to grow with more favorable tax status and not be forced to be closed 10 years after the kid reaches the age of majority or after the age he stops going to school or after age 26, whichever one applies to you. Talk about as clear as mud. There's so many moving parts here to this one. But again, it doesn't apply if you name a grandchild as beneficiary. How many IRAs have we opened, Chris? I can't even count them. For grandparents who want to name their grandchild as beneficiary.
Yeah, because the old stretch rules allowed that.
Absolutely.
It didn't even have to be related to you. It could be a random newborn that you found at the hospital.
Exactly.
There was no constraints there. Now there are. Now there are because it's an exception to the new 10-year rule. And they're granting an exception not for all beneficiaries, otherwise that would undermine the rule. They're granting it just for your immediate descendants, your own children.
Okay. So keep in mind, when the child reaches the age of majority, then the 10-year payout begins. Okay, disabled individuals. If you name a disabled person as beneficiary of an IRA, they are a special class of beneficiaries not subject to the 10-year rule. They will be able to do the stretch out. So if you think we can forget the stretch out rules, I guess we really technically can't because there are classes of beneficiaries that have their own
but
rules.
But as a reminder, though, an IRA is generally not a good thing to leave to a disabled person for a variety of reasons. So this takes a little bit of the harm off of it, if you will. But if the IRA is very large, those RMDs are going to be large enough to jeopardize their benefits that they're receiving from government.
What I need to find out, and it's not in the summary that I got most of this from, you can see where my head is going. Will it apply if the beneficiary of the IRA is a special needs trust and the only beneficiary of the special needs trust is the disabled individual? That's how this is going to work. If the government's going to allow that.
Yeah. There'll have to be a ruling on that.
Yep.
Yep.
But that's where this will shine. Okay. So disabled individuals, and it's not just any random disabled person. You have to, it's the very strict tax code definition of disability in section 72M7. I won't read it all, but it is a very strict definition of disability. It's not just a random, oh, I lost my job, I'm disabled, I don't feel good type thing. You have to qualify for the strict tax code section 72M7. Okay. Another class of people, the chronically ill. This one, I think they had good intentions. I don't feel these people are going to be stretching out. By the very definition, they are not long for this world. The 10-year will probably impact them the less, the least, rather. Chronically ill, as defined, and this one surprised me, tax code section 7702B, chapter C2, was that paragraph C2 rather, excuse me. Those are the tax rules set for defining
chronically ill,
as explained in long-term care insurance policies. 2 of 6 activities of daily living. So in other words, if you leave your IRA to someone who can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living, which is the definition long-term care insurance policies have to follow to have tax-free long-term care insurance benefits in section of the code 7702BC2, in case you guys want to go run out and start reading that wonderful midnight reading. Essentially, 2 of 6 activities of daily living. That's where long-term care insurance policies will pay a benefit. And that's where the government says we, meaning they, the government, will allow the beneficiary to stretch the payments. Well, let me tell you, for most people, if you can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living, a 10-year payout is probably long enough. Not totally long enough, but probably long enough. But also, if you can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living, all jokes aside, you have some very, very serious medical expenses. And from a tax standpoint, you are going to want to drain that IRA. To hell with keeping it open. Why do you want to drain it? Because you're going to have some big medical deductions on your taxes. And a lot of that IRA will come out tax-free.
Yep.
So I don't know if allowing someone who can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living the ability to stretch payments out over their remaining life expectancy is something that's ever going to be used. Because they're probably going to close the IRA anyways and take the money out for their own care, or they probably aren't going to live for another 10 years. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that was a unique thing that they put in there. And then here's the fifth class of beneficiaries that makes this a little bit interesting. Any beneficiary, not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner when they passed away. Any beneficiary, not more than 10 years younger. Essentially, so siblings, brothers and sisters.
I was going to say siblings.
Not kids, not grandkids, but your brothers and sisters or random strangers, yeah, or your favorite IRA podcasters. As long as they are not more than 10 years younger than you.
It's kind of like a get-out-of-jail-free card. If they think that you're not trying to manipulate things by passing wealth generationally to a
exactly.
much younger generation,
exactly.
which is not what these retirement accounts were meant to do. They were meant to fund your retirement. They weren't meant as a wealth accumulation and generation-spanning approach. Within 10 years, that means that their RMDs are going to be very similar to yours. And so you're not really there. The Uncle Sam isn't really being substantially harmed in them stretching it. Where if you left it to a 1 year old and you were 70, that's a big difference for Uncle Sam.
This rule proves to me they didn't like the stretch.
Just in general. Yeah, the idea of the stretch.
Because
yeah.
they're saying we're going to exempt people who pretty much are your age. And we're going to let this go out over their life expectancy like we were going to let you. We don't want you giving it to younger. That's why they ruled out grandkids.
Yep.
We don't want you passing this to younger generations and keeping this open for a long time. And remember, folks, this applies to Roth IRAs too. Granted, the money comes out tax-free. They don't want Roth staying around forever.
Growing tax-free.
Tax-free.
Right.
So this is saying you leave the money to your children. Children got to close it within 10 years. Leave it to your brother or sister. Chances are your brothers and sister, unless your parents were very Catholic and had kids for 14, 15, 16 years. But you leave it to your brother and sister. Chances are they will be able to stretch it out. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So
all new rules to learn.
Have they
good times
simplified IRA distribution rules? I'm saying no.
I don't know. I think the public is going to find it simpler because the vast majority of the public just has to remember the 10-year rule. Spouses, of course, have always had the same rule. Everybody else, it's going to be rare that you fall into one of the other four categories, I think. Kids probably the most popular. Kids will be the most popular beneficiaries that aren't the spouse. That just seems natural. My spouse isn't around, so I'm going to give it to my kids. But not a lot of people inheriting IRAs have the disability waivers, the chronically ill waivers. The interesting one is this 10-year issue. But that's just keeping the same old rule for those people. So it's not really a new rule we have to learn. It's just remembering to apply the rule to that. So the rules are different. I'll kind of reserve judgment on whether it's worse or better as far as complications of rules until we hear some of the nuances. Some of this stuff with these one-off questions that we started to ask today as we walked through this, depending on how they decide to handle it, could turn into really complicated, convoluted
things. And oftentimes Congress writes the rules, and then it takes the IRS a while to promulgate the rules and say, hey, here's how we're going to interpret it. This is what we're going to apply. So there's a lot we don't know. But what I want you guys, you listeners, to realize, there's only one, unless you are one of these five classes of beneficiaries we went over, there's only one RMD now. And that is, within 10 years of death, that RMD must be taken. One RMD for non-spouse beneficiaries who inherit the accounts. And the one RMD is the whole account has to be closed within 10 years. Do not, and we're going to be end up preaching on this, Chris, incessantly over the next X amount of years until they change the rules again. This does not mean you sit on your laurels now with an inherited IRA.
No.
Which we've done tons of retirement plans for people who have inherited IRAs. And they just take the little RMD and that's it. No more. We have to look at some serious planning. And this is going to make things unique. Because if we have to start taking money out and you're over the age of 65... you might now start getting subject to IRMA, being forced to take money out. So do you do nothing for 9 years and in year 10 take it out in 1 year and be a massive taxes and massive IRMA? Or do you stretch it out and take a little bit of taxes and maybe a little bit of IRMA? I mean, there's going to be a lot of calculations that need to be done now on how best to pass on or handle an inherited retirement account. But more importantly than that, it means everyone, but especially you do it yourselfers. You got to start looking at tax planning big time and realizing that these IRAs or any retirement account, not just IRAs, TSPs, 403Bs, 457s. As Ed Slott said with the very first book he ever wrote nearly 20 years ago now, are a ticking tax time bomb. And I hate them more now than ever with the passage of this law. Because they just create complexity everywhere they go. And even though they're invested and all you do-it-yourselfers look at your IRAs as an account with an account balance like an asset, they're not. They're IRD. Don't ever forget that. Income with respect to a decedent. IRD. That's what the government categorizes your IRA as. You may have it invested at Vanguard. You may be patting yourself on the back because you're managing it really well. And over the last 11 years, it would be pretty hard not to manage it really well. You may be happy about how it's growing, but you are creating ticking tax time bomb. And the government loves it. Why? Because your individual account is actually a joint account with your silent partner who is going to take a ton of it. And under this new rule or law, they're going to get a hell of a lot more. Especially for those of you who named a trust as beneficiary. Now, I'm not going to get into that today because we're probably about an hour in. So we're going to go to another show and start talking. I think it might be my deeper show. I might do two deeper shows, a general. I think I'm going to do a death of the stretch and tie into that death of the stretch how that impacts trusts. Because let me tell you, I never was a fan of trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. And unfortunately, I would see it all the time, mostly by attorneys who just thought, I'm going to generate a lot of income by creating yet another trust. I didn't like trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. And after the Secure Act, I despise trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. And so are you. And if you have a trust as beneficiary of your IRA, here's a little test we're going to do. How long before your attorney calls you? Because if he or she hasn't called you by the time you're listening to this show, they get their heads up their ass. Because they've created something that I never was a fan of, and they need to fix, and fix big time. Because the way that trust is written, it's going to blow up under this new law. So we'll get into that. Those of you who have trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs, listen to the whole series of shows we did on why we don't like trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. And now you're going to understand more why we don't want them as beneficiary of an IRA. Perfect. All right. So we'll do that maybe on the next show.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this in the new year, Happy New Year. If it's not quite the new year, Happy New Year shortly. So as we run through more of these shows, we'll hear technically it hasn't been signed into law, but all indications are it has. So hopefully we won't have to cancel this recording. There could be.
It's supposed to be signed this evening.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It technically hasn't been signed, but is supposed to be. So we'll... I've stopped predicting what's going to happen back in Washington, D.C., so it's too chaotic for me to follow.
They'll sign it. There's much too much point spending
so. Yeah,
in
yeah, I
there.
Know. No, I'm confident it probably will. But anyway, as we learn more and more things about how the IRS is going to apply and interpret these things, especially with some of the nuanced issues that come up, we'll make sure to share it with you here on the show. And if you have a unique situation, this isn't a Q&A show, but I'll remind you, we do a Q&A show where we answer people's questions on a variety of topics. And if you have a unique situation, you think that this new law has changed, reach out to us, send us the question, describe what's going on, and we'll do our best to figure out how this new change or
law... I will interrupt. According to the Wall Street Journal...
It's been signed.
2 minutes ago, the Senate passed it.
Yeah, it still hasn't been signed, though.
Trump's not going to not sign it.
I know, but technically it hasn't happened yet.
He's supposed to sign it tonight.
I understand. But it's good. It's a good sign that it passed the Senate, because that was still... to go. So 2 minutes ago.
2 minutes
we're
ago.
Talk about timely.
Yes.
Although there's been a bunch of people talking about it already, but they were jumping the gun a little bit because it wasn't a done deal yet. So anyway, if you want to reach out to us, either to send us a question that we can answer on our Q&A show or to learn a little bit more about us and the services we provide as retirement planners, jimhelps.com is the website to go to. That's jimhelps.com. On there, there's a contact form. You can fill it out. We'll get in touch with you, or you can pick up the phone and call us. The phone number is there on the website, or I can give it to you. It's 970-530-0556. Even though we're in Colorado, we service people all throughout the country. And while we aren't estate, since this is, we mentioned trusts here, we're not estate planning attorneys, but we do have access to a network of high-quality estate planning attorneys around the country that if you need a referral to somebody, we can probably help you out there. So we'll talk to you a little bit about your situation. If it involves a trust and rewriting a trust, we can certainly hook you up with the people in your area that can get that done properly for you. What else? I think that's about it. Just remember the website, jimhelps.com. JimHelps.com. Everything you wanted to know about us and how to contact us and engage with us, right on that website. So we really appreciate you listening. We'll be back to you next week with another show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.